share with us. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, let me say my sobriety date's July 4th, 1986, and I'm very grateful to have just celebrated another year of sobriety. My home group is the Mount Vernon Group, and I'm a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is why I think I'm standing here today. And that is the only reason why. I do stay very plugged in, and I'm not as perfect as Robin just made me sound, though. Let me just say that right now. It was very nice to have Robin, Maggie, and Debbie sitting up here when I came up here. I just came back from vacation like a few hours ago. And so, feeling a little disconnected, and I get here and find out that three of my very best friends are sitting up at the podium with me as I sort of get ready to stand up here, and I'm nervous. So I just thought that was very cool, and that's really how this thing works. You know, we really just, we're here for each other, and if you're new here and you haven't experienced that yet, wait. It will come, and it will happen. And it can be forever if you want it to be. And, I was talking to a friend on my way over here who, her AA community experienced the death of a child this week. And she said, she was talking about her friends and all the events, and she said an AA really showed up. And I just thought, we do. That's what we do. We always show up. And I just think that's really cool. And it's not all on me, and it's not all on you. We do it together. And, sometimes I can be there, sometimes you can be there. But we're always there. And I was so reminded of that. And while I was sitting up here today, I was very reminded of that again. And very grateful. I am to share with you in a general way what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like now. And, sometimes it's hard to recall what it was like because life is so good. And I come to meetings on a regular basis because I need to be reminded what it was like. Because it's been a long time, and I spent this week with family and my three sisters and one of my brothers who really didn't pay attention to what I was doing when I was drinking, but my sisters did. And, we don't talk about that because it's just not a part of our lives today. But it does remind me, because I don't see them often, I see them once or twice a year, it does remind me sort of who I was for some reason being around them, because it's family and I was visiting in Maryland, which is where I did all my drinking. And so I do get a sense of where I came from, and I was at a beach that I frequented often when I was drinking, and I see a whole new view of it now, and my son, who is now very old, he'll ask me about it, and I would drive to this beach a couple hours in the middle of the night, and they joke with me about my 5-gallon box of wine that I would steal from the restaurant that I worked for, and for a drive to the beach. And I would have my son with me, and at the time he was, anywhere from somewhere between, I probably didn't do that when he was a baby, maybe between 2 and 6. And, and I didn't have a hotel or a room or a place to stay. We would just stay on the beach, literally on the beach. And in those days, you could kind of do that. The police would come by occasionally sometimes and clear the beach. And if you were quiet enough, they usually left you alone. And, that doesn't happen now. They clear it pretty well. But and I would just stay there and drink all day long and, maybe sleep a little while and enjoy the beach and, maybe find somewhere to stay the next night. Maybe not. Maybe I'd drive back. And And the wine was really just sort of like you bring water, you know, now I bring water, bottles of water in a cooler. Well, the wine was like that. You know, if you're an iced tea drinker, you know, I drank wine like you drink iced tea. That wasn't the drinking part. That was just having something to drink. The drinking part was other drinks. It was, you know, tequila and vodka and other things. And I would just drink like that. And so I'd get there, we're at the beach, now we're going to really drink. Because, you know, I've driven and I just had a little wine. Now we're going to really drink. And that is the way I drank. I'm from a family of six children. My parents divorced when I was young. And a woman I work with who is not in the program was asking me about my family, and I was telling her about my parents, and she said, oh, that must have been hard, because my parents divorced when I was 10, and my mother was very depressed, and I said, well, I just left. It didn't really seem hard to me. It was actually kind of convenient, if you want to know the truth, because the way that I drank, I didn't really want to be bothered by any parents, and I wasn't. And, you know, my father wasn't living there, my mother really didn't parent, and I just did whatever I wanted, and I moved out when I was 15, and by the time I was 16, I was pregnant. And that's that son that's now really old. At the time, I had been drinking a lot, and as much as I could. I was actually a good student in school until I started partying, and then I didn't go to school much. I did pass each grade, but I probably missed a third of the school year. And again, because I'm old too, back then you could do that. Now you can't really do that. And I would get passed to the next grade, and I would keep moving on. When I fell in love for the first time before I got pregnant, I knew then what I drank like. I knew that I drank a lot, and I couldn't control how much I drank, and I blacked out, I threw up, I passed out, and that is the way that I drank. And I knew also that it wasn't very attractive, and I really liked this guy. So I didn't drink as much. He drank and he did a lot of other things, and I did the things that didn't cause me to throw up, black out, and pass out. And then I got pregnant, and I moved in with him when I was 15, and I got pregnant at 16. And by the time I was 18, I had decided that this guy was a troublemaker, and I needed to get away from him, and he was a drug dealer, and it was a bad life. So I decided to leave the relationship. We never got married. So I'm 18. I have a child who now is one, and I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a job, but I'm leaving. So this is just that's really a good example of how I lived. I still do that a little bit now. I don't leave anymore, but I do things without maybe a plan sometimes. The minute I decided that, and this is where, when I read in the book about the cunning, baffling, and powerful nature of alcoholism, and when I learned about alcoholism, this is kind of the part in my story where I thought, there it is. I picked up drinking right where I left off because I didn't care about him anymore. I didn't care. And I wanted him to leave. And so I started drinking. I was drinking some, but I really started drinking, and I would go out at night and not come back. And, you know, every night I'd go out and say, you know, I'll be back at 1 or 2 or whatever. I'd come back at 6 or 7 the next morning, maybe. I just couldn't stop drinking. It didn't matter what the consequences were. Once I started, I could not stop. And I continued to drink that way. That relationship ended. I did finally get a driver's license and started working. And that really started my career in the restaurant and bar business, which was short-lived. And I just moved around because I was really good when I was on, and when I had other interests, like partying, I wasn't so good. And I would, you know, work for a while, and I would find a place to live, and things would be going great for, a few months maybe. And then I couldn't pay my bills, and I would get kicked out of where I was living, and eventually I would get figured out at work, and I was about to lose my job, and I am really good at quitting right before I get fired. And so I would just leave and find another job till I got to the place where I was not employable, even in a bar, and I'm not talking about a nice bar. Talking about a not a very nice bar. And the thing that I guess, you know, as I think about my drinking and the unmanageability, and I was just looking, I just opened my big book on my before I came over here tonight just to see where, you know, just I like just opening it just to see what I open it to. And it was talking about, it was in more about alcoholism, and it was talking about self-knowledge and how, you know, self-knowledge can't make us not drink. And then it also talked about even the most intelligent people, once they start drinking, can't, and I'm not classifying myself as that, but can't stop insane behavior. And so as I was reading that tonight and I was thinking about it, I thought, I knew I had this child that I had to take care of. I knew I did. And I knew I wasn't taking care of him. I knew I had to be a better employee, and I couldn't. And I knew I had to probably find a place to live of my own. My way of finding a place to live was finding a boyfriend who had a place to live, and then I'd live with him. Until that got old, and then I would move out. And then I'd, you know, find another place to live. And so I knew that wasn't good, but I couldn't do it any other way. And, you know, it didn't matter what my intentions were when I started out a day. At the end of that day, I would end up in places I didn't want to be. My son was with a babysitter. I'd be with people I didn't want to be with, and I wouldn't know how it happened. And I had big periods of blackouts where I just didn't know what happened. And so when I read that today, I thought, that really describes my drinking. You know, there were some things that I knew. I obviously had a lot of, I wasn't that smart, but I did know that I had this child that I had to take care of. And I had intentions of doing that, and I couldn't do it. And, you know, I guess the final sort of straw there, which was kind of nothing new. It's funny, you know, how when I think about when I hit bottom, it really wasn't anything that hadn't happened time and time again. But my sister, the one I actually was staying with over the week, she came to my house and my apartment, and it was full of people that she considered undesirable. Those were my friends. And she, you know, would feel free to tell me that and tell them that too. And she came, and unlike her, she didn't say anything. She just left. You know, she just said, "Oh, I just stopped by to see you. You're busy. I'll come back later," which was unusual. Typically, she'd clear the house, you know, and want to make sure my son was okay and all that. And she just said, "I'll come back." So she came back the next day, and I was there, just my son and I were there, and she offered for me to move in with her. And I had not lived with her since I left my mother's home. I hadn't lived with any of my family. And she, and I thought, well, how she presented it was, "I'll help you provide a stable life for Billy, my son." And that's the part I heard. Evidently, there were some rules attached to that. And so she, there were simple rules, you know, it was things like, you're going to have a regular job, which means daytime hours, and And we'll have dinner at night together as a family. We'll like get groceries. Because my way of having groceries was milk and cereal and maybe some pasta and butter to put in the pasta, and that was it. And because it had to be small, because I a lot of times didn't have power, and so it's easy to put all that in a cooler. And so that's how I did groceries. And so she wanted to, you know, have groceries. She would help me pick him up from daycare, and, you know, it was just going to be this happy family. And it really sounded like the right thing to do. And I, you know, the first thing out of my mouth, which is funny, is, well, I just signed a lease here. I can't leave. And, you know, one thing I didn't talk about, I was very, well, you know, I was moving and quitting jobs and such, so I was very financially irresponsible. A lease really meant nothing to me. I'm not quite sure why I threw it up there. But I was, you know, so we talked through that, and she sort of reminded me that, you know, I don't think that's going to hurt your credit. And so I moved in with her, and within 2 months I was in detox. And it wasn't that I was drinking more. It wasn't that anything happened. It was more of the same, and I couldn't live with myself because I made a commitment to her. And so, you know, up until then, there was only this child that knew that I couldn't be a mother. And he wasn't old enough to really be able to tell anybody that. And now there's my sister who knows that I can't do this. Because I couldn't, when it was my turn to pick him up from daycare, I couldn't get there on time because I did get that daytime job, but I got a job in a bar. And so, you know, happy hour starts at 5 in Maryland. I don't know if it does here, but, you know, it would be happy hour and my friends would come in and I'd get off work and I would think, I'll just have one drink and, you know, I don't need to tell you what happened there. And so I couldn't pick him up, or it was my turn to make dinner and I didn't get home. Or it was my turn to stop at the grocery store and pick up food, and I didn't do that. And you know, it was just more the same. And again, you know, there I can't tell you, and this is probably the most heartbreaking of all for me, for my son. When we lived alone, he would get off of school, and I wouldn't be home. Now, I worked at night. I wasn't at work. And I wouldn't be home, and his bus driver would drop him off, and this is a kindergartner, would drop him off, and they knew I wasn't home. They'd circle back around after they dropped off the other kids and pick him back up and take him to the school, and I'd have to go to the school. And I'm out partying at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so here I am doing this again, you know. And then it's funny, only he knew, and it's not that I didn't drink a lot at that to forget it. It didn't change my behavior. You know, I'm back to that self-knowledge, and knowing it's wrong doesn't help me any when I'm drinking. And so so here I am again, and now she knows. And if she knows, she's told the whole family, I can tell you that. That was just a joke. I mean, it's true, but that was a joke. I couldn't live with that. It's now right in my face. And I did what I always do, which is I wanted to go out, and it was my friend's birthday, and, you know, we should go out and celebrate. And she said she wouldn't babysit for me. And so I put my son to bed, and not only did I put my son to bed, I put my friend's son to bed in my house that I share with my sister, and we left. And I really didn't think anything was wrong with that. And so we left, we went out and drank. We went to a nightclub, drank all night, came back, stayed up the rest of the night. And the next morning I just went to get ready for work, and I looked in the mirror, and it just really hit me. I really had no idea who I was looking at. I had lost everything I ever was or thought I was. And I don't know why it hit me that day that suddenly, but it did. And so I overdosed, and I, you know, it was sort of just happened. There was no thought of anything. It just happened. And I had this boyfriend who was one of those undesirable guys. I think she may have told me he wasn't supposed to be over at our house. He's the kind of guy, and these are the boyfriends I liked. When you're riding down the street and a police car pulls up beside you, your boyfriend gets out and runs. So, you know, we won't go into all that, but that was my type of guy. And there's a lot of funny stories around that. But anyway, so I actually never spent any time in jail, but I certainly should have, but I felt like I did because I visited so many boyfriends in jail. So he was there, and he probably did the single most responsible thing that he ever did as long as I knew him, which was he called my sister that morning, which is weird because he knew that she hated him, and he called, and I'm glad that he did. I probably wasn't going to die. However, I was in a condition where it was easy for her to say, I'm taking you to the hospital, and I went, and she took me to the detox unit. And another hour or two or three, and that window may have gone by. And for that morning, that window was open, and I went. I had no idea. I'm not quite sure I knew it was detox, but I really had no idea and what she had planned. But luckily, she did. She had done her research, and she actually worked at the hospital that she took me to. And off we went. I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, I think for a long time we used to kid about her feeling responsible for my sobriety. And, she certainly was an instrument to get me where I needed to be. And I don't think she understands the power of that. I really don't. And because we recently talked about it, and she really blew it off. I don't think she understands. But but she was there at a moment in time where I had just a teeny bit of willingness, and I went. And so I was in detox, and I had friends that went away to treatment, and you guys probably have experienced this. And I had no idea what it was. I thought they went away to rest for 28 days because they always came back. And I didn't know anyone that hadn't come back. And so I didn't really know what treatment meant because the ones that came back in the lifestyle I was living didn't talk about what they learned at treatment. And so I really just thought it was a rest time. And so I'm in detox, and in comes my boss, in the restaurant I worked in. He was the owner, and he was there because he just got back from the Bahamas and had a little too much to drink, and his doctors thought he should go to the hospital for 7 days. And so that just is more proof that it's just, you just rest, right? And so I assume he still drank when he left there, I don't know. But after a couple days, there was not much rest going on there, but when I finally sort of came to and figured out what was going on, one of the things that they used as a teaching tool there was Father Martin's Chalk Talk. And if anyone has seen that, it's really boring, and it was bad films. It was like reel-to-reel films that are hard to watch because they're so staticky. But he started talking about the disease of alcoholism, and I just knew exactly what he was talking about. I thought, that's it. That's what I have. That's what's wrong with me. And I'll have to tell you, I was very confused because I am a drug addict and an alcoholic, and I did an awful lot of drugs, and alcohol's legal, and everybody was drinking, and I really was struggling with, was it alcohol, was it drugs, and why can't I just drink? And my family all drink socially. I have a brother in recovery, but you know, they're big drinkers, and they seem to drink socially and pretty successfully. And so it was hard for me to really know at 23 years old that alcohol was the problem. But when I saw that, it just started to sort of help me to understand that just maybe that alcohol might be the problem, because I could really relate to how he described the disease concept and how it works in our brain and what it does to people. And I was quite relieved when I found that out, because really, up until that point, I thought that I was just a bad person and that I just did bad things and there was no hope for me. And when I heard that, I didn't have any idea what was in store for me. I was kind of getting this idea that I wasn't supposed to drink, but I did feel like I had a little bit of hope, and I don't know really where that came from. And he, I don't remember anything else he talked about. I just remember that. And then the other thing that happened while I was in there is the local AA members there brought meetings in, and this guy, Larry A., used to bring the meeting in, and he was talking in the meeting about how his son, who was a practicing alcoholic, had just emptied his bank account, bounced checks, took all his money, and he had no money to pay his bills. And instead of going out to drink about it, he came to the detox center to bring an AA meeting to us. And that just blew me away for whatever reason. I thought, wow. I'm thinking that would really make me mad and I would be out drinking. Because I drank about bad things, happy things, sad things, all things. And so that was like a really big thing that you could drink about. And he had chose not to do that. And I saw him at every meeting I went to in those 7 days. So they took us down to the cafeteria. There was a group that met there, which I later joined. And then they brought meetings into the facility, into the detox center. And he was there. And he seemed at peace with what was going on in his life. And that just really attracted me. And, you know, I'm 23 and he seemed really old then. And I think he wasn't that old. he may have been 40-ish, maybe. he was another just sort of thing that brought me hope. And, you know, I forget sometimes what it's like to be new, and I have to remember, you know, we were sitting around thinking, how are we gonna get married if we can't drink again? Because you have to have a champagne toast. I didn't have any prospects, because the guy that called my sister that morning, he actually went back to jail that day. He got picked up by the police that day, and he was probably on his way home from my house. So I had no prospects, but I was worried about that, you know. And then how do you live and not drink, and how do you do all the things in life that we do today sober? How do you do that without drinking? And it just seemed like a very foreign idea. And, you know, of course, everybody that came in from AA said, one day at a time, one day at a time. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, I'm not stupid. I know this is forever or not. Because Father Martin pretty much said that. The people I was in there with that I had been talking to, you know, kind of making friends with, they were all going to a 28-day program. And I was had not planned to do that, and I have a child at home, and my sister and I share a townhouse, and she couldn't afford to pay all the bills, and so I just knew I was going home. And then probably like on day 7, I panicked, because I knew that if I went home, I would fall right back into my life and probably not be able to stay sober. And so I called her and asked her if I could go, if she would take care of my son, and she agreed to do that. And you know, once again, I don't think she understands how helpful that was to me. I probably could have stayed sober, but I was not at all ready to reach out and take responsibility for my sobriety on day 7. I wasn't even sure I was an alcoholic, quite honestly. I knew I was, but there was still this nagging, I'm too young, and not now, and, you know, maybe later, and, you know, when I get older. So I went to a 28-day program, and Which was good, and they took us to AA meetings, and they had AA members brought meetings in, so we got exposed a lot. And when I left there, they told me I had to have a sponsor's name, so I knew, you know, as I was going to meetings, I had to start asking someone to be my sponsor, and I needed to start getting women's phone numbers. And I really didn't have any good women friends, just the one, and she actually got sober the same time I did. But that was really the only female friend that I had. I hung around with a lot of females, but we weren't really friends. Not like the friends, certainly nothing like the friends I have today. And so this whole idea of a sponsor, really, I was not comfortable with that. I didn't like it, and I really didn't understand how that would help me in any way. And so, but I did what I was supposed to do. And I wrote down the name. I wrote down the name, never called her. And then I got out. And so it took me a while to sort of change my behavior. And if you're new, or if you're sponsoring someone that's new, for me, it really took actually working the steps to change my behavior. Just not drinking didn't do it for me. And I don't think it would do. I think if I just stopped working the program and not drank today, I'd go back to that old behavior. And I was in treatment, yes, but I was not working the program yet. And so the day I get out of treatment, my son and my sister are at home preparing a welcome home dinner for me. And I decide, this woman that got sober the same day I did, I'm going to go down to the courthouse and be a character witness for her custody case on the day. And so I get my friend, the drug dealer, to pick me up from treatment and take me to the courthouse. And so thank God they didn't call me. It got settled somehow, and that would have just been a train wreck. But it seemed like the right thing to do at the time. And so I go to the courthouse, and I, just to kind of to give you an example of who I was at 6 weeks sobriety, and I get there with my drug dealer, hang out with him for a while, get dropped off, wander around the courthouse, run into what I'd like to call my lawyer, but really I was having an affair with him. He was a married man. And so I run into him, and I get him to give me a ride home because I'm doing all this. I have no car. I don't have a ride. I don't know what happened to my friend that I went there for. She was there. In the meantime, I'm now late for dinner, which was my welcome home dinner. And I end up having to, after a series of events, I end up having to call my sister to have her come pick me up. And I'm several hours late. So it took me a while to change that behavior. And I get another sponsor, and I pick somebody that I used to drink with, and 'cause it seemed like it would be easier. Well, she was, and it was actually initially easier to pick up the phone, but she wasn't really working the program. And, you know, for whatever reason, I noticed that. I'm not sure why I even knew what it looked like, but I did realize that, and I stopped using her. And after a series of asking other people to be my sponsor and not calling them, I did finally pick a woman that I knew her from the meeting, from my home group. And I picked her because she looked clean and nice, and she was nice. When she shared in the meeting, she was nice. She didn't talk like I did, which was with a lot of profanity, and she looked clean, and I didn't feel clean. And so I picked her to be my sponsor, and we actually started working the steps together. And I will have to tell you that what I found out from her when I shared my four-step with her is that she was just like me. She had just worked the steps, which is why she was nice and looked clean. she had actually worked the steps. And so that was sort of the beginning for me. And, you know, I came in single, and I had this child, and I was in and out of relationships my first year. I didn't do that fifth step until probably I had close to a year. So I'm in and out of relationships. The second year, I decided that I would try that suggestion of the first, you know, no relationships in the first year. I decided to try that the second year. And and I have to tell you, it's one of the best things I did for myself. Really, really was. And it was during that time that I really learned how to become friends with women, other women, and to develop a support system around me. And I'm very grateful for that. And during that time, I moved to Georgia. I retired from bartending when I got sober, and I got a job in. I got one job in a retail store, and then my sister, that same sister who was no longer living with me, she called me and said, my company needs to hire someone, and I think you should apply. And so I applied for a job actually working in a payroll department. Now, I didn't mention that I quit high school, and I really had only worked in bars and restaurants. I kind of did a little office work for a friend. And so they needed someone in their payroll department, so I had nothing to offer, zero, except that I was available. And and they needed someone that was available, and they hired me. And and I, you know, it's funny because that was, you know, you never know what doors are going to be when they open. And that has become my career, which I'm still in now. I don't do payroll anymore, but it was a healthcare company, and I still work in healthcare today, and that was really the start of it. So I had this job, and it was a real job, and it paid well, and up until that point, I was having to cocktail waitress one night a week just to get by. I didn't have to do that anymore. I was able to quit that job. And that was actually for the restaurant that I had been fired from twice, and I worked there for 9 months, and I didn't steal any money, and I didn't steal any liquor for 9 whole months, and I hope that I was able to bring business in, because I knew a lot of the people in that area for that owner as a way of making amends. I moved to Georgia with that company that I was working for, and my son and I moved, and my sister actually moved with us. So this is the second time I moved in with her, and she does this. She moved in with me for 6 months and then would move out and go live with her boyfriend, and same boyfriend, they just moved in and out of each other's homes for a while, but. So we moved to Georgia together. I knew nobody, and I'm thinking, AA's there, I'll be fine, right? I mean, wouldn't you think that if you're going to move? And and I got here, and I did everything I was supposed to do. I got a home group. I got a sponsor. I started going to a lot of meetings. I went to meetings every day, and I figured out how to get involved in service by asking around, and I... By 6 months in, I was absolutely miserable. Now, my mom had died, and we went back for the funeral and all of that, and it made me really, really homesick. And I told you a little bit about my mother, but my brothers and sisters and I are very close, and still are, and so I just got really homesick and wanted to be around them, and quite honestly, I hadn't really connected with anyone. I was doing all the right things, but I just really hadn't connected, and so I started the process of moving back to Maryland, which is where I got sober, and the other thing I realized is that you can never, ever replace the group of people you got sober with. And I went to meeting night after night looking around the room for those faces, and they weren't there. And that was really hard for me. And I did that for a long time. And I have to tell you, eventually, as I drove back to Maryland, I drove back to Baltimore, I don't know, 5 or 6 times the first year I lived here. And I would go back and I would go to my home group. And by the end of the first year, they weren't there either. They had all gone. And you don't see it as much when you're in it as when you step away and come back. But people come and go a lot here. And I didn't realize that. And I really felt kind of lost because they weren't there and they weren't here. And so long story short, the move didn't work out. I did quit my job here, and I was looking for another job, and it didn't work out. They let me come back to my job here. And my sponsor said to me, okay, so you're not moving. You need to start living here. You've been in two places. You've physically been here, and you've been mentally and emotionally there. You need to bring it all here. And for some reason, I heard that loud and clear, and it was a turning point for me. This became my home, and this is my home today. I have been here 27 years, and so that was huge for me. And what I realized is I need to be able to say I need help. And see, I thought because I was doing everything. I'm good at the actions. I was doing everything you told me to do. I was absolutely miserable, and I couldn't tell anybody that because I thought I should be. Now I'm 2 years sober. I don't know why I thought I should be better than that, but I thought I should be better than that, and I didn't tell anyone that I was miserable. And that taught me that I have got to learn how to do that, and I am better at it. Not great, but I'm better at it. So kind of fast-forwarding to where I am today, that's sort of how I got here and got settled in Georgia and NAA. And during that time, after the incident with moving, that's when I went around and said, okay, how do I get involved in service work? I had been to meetings in jails in Maryland, and that's what I wanted to do, and because I'm really comfortable with jails. And And I got introduced. Somebody directed me to a guy, and it turns out he did public information and cooperation with professional community service work, and I just joined up with him. And so that's what we did, and I did that for 8 years in various capacities. And it was a lot of fun, and it was really neat to be a part of a committee that was helping people not inside of our rooms but outside of our rooms know how to find us. And and it was really neat to be able to be a part of that. And I got very settled. That career took off. I actually went to college, and I spent 12 years in college in sobriety. But I do have a graduate degree. It was a long, long 12 years, and I worked full-time. Thank you. I worked full-time, and I had a child, and then I got married and had a second child. And I can remember a lot of weekends calling my sponsor saying, I just can't do this anymore. I can't spend my whole weekend doing homework. I want a life. And she'd say, hang up the phone and do your homework. She never gave me an option to quit. I don't know why. She's really nice. I'm not sure why she never offered that up. I just kept going. And, I went to my home group religiously. That's very important to me. And I knew when my schedule was going to be that busy that I had to get to my home group because that's my foundation. And that would be my priority, was my home group, my child, my homework. That was it. Or my children, actually, after a point in time. And so I just one day at a time got through that. And, I'm really grateful. And that may not be what some people want for themselves. It was a dream I had. And I guess what I learned from that is whatever dream I have or whatever dream you have, if you stay sober, and as I stayed sober and worked the program, I became able to do the footwork to achieve that dream. And, you know, and I've seen that time and time again with my life. And I don't, you know, I don't have huge aspirations, but education is something that was important to me. My work that I do for a living is very important to me. And, you know, I've had a lot of success there, and it's because of here. It really has everything to do with what I have learned here. I've learned how to be an employee. I have learned how to be of service to everyone around me, not just AA, but everybody around me. And and I have learned how to be a worker among workers and one among many. And, you know, and because of that, I just show up and I do my part and I try to be of service. And guess what? People notice that. People notice that because not everyone's like that. And I learned that here. You taught me how to do that. And so I did get married, I think at 3 or 4 years sober I got married, and I stayed married for about 14 years, and unfortunately that did not work out, and I am very grateful that both of us are in AA, and were in AA at the time, and it was probably the best divorce that anyone could go through. It was horrible, and it was painful, and it was my idea, and it was still horrible and painful. And, you know, he just said to me not long ago, because we have a child together, he said that I was better as an ex-wife than I was as a wife. I really like his current wife, so I'm kind of thinking that's a compliment, because she's really nice. And so she's a lot nicer to him than I was, I'll just say that. And so I'm grateful that we are there, that we have a relationship like that, and our daughter is the beneficiary of that, because we have been able to communicate, not always comfortably, but we have been able to communicate and do what we need to do for her, and over time, it's easy, and it just works, and, you know, We know each other's shortcomings, and we fill in, and for the other one, and it works really well. So as difficult as I know that was for her at the time, and I think sometimes family events get difficult because she has all this extended family, and now that she's 21 and has to sort of balance some of that on her own, it does get a little stressful for her, but she'll learn how to do it. And, you know, but it does work well. And again, it's because of what we both learned here. It's because we both had sponsors. We were both working the steps. We both got the help we needed outside of the program and took care of what needed to be taken care of. and I, you know, that was devastating for me. I sponsored women who came to me for advice and, you know, experience more so than advice on my marriage to help them, and I gave it to them, and then I got divorced. That was hard. I had a woman who said that she didn't want me to sponsor her anymore because she needed somebody in a successful marriage. That was difficult. And, you know, so I really felt like I had failed in a lot of different ways. And I heard a lot of people. I heard an awful lot of people. And so I did with that what I do with everything else that happens in my life, is I spent some time with my sponsor and I started working the steps, and I took 3 years to figure out how, if I ever, you know, get into a situation or I want to get married, how I can be better at that. And and not repeat the same mistakes that I had made, because I never wanted to do that to another human being. And so one of the things I did was got really clear on what I wanted from you know, with a partner and what I was looking for, because I hadn't done that. And quite honestly, I didn't know to do that. And so I spent a lot of time really thinking about what is good for me, what do I want, and what would be fulfilling for me. And by the way, I have these children, and now I have grandchildren. And so, and you know, like the first thing is, I'm not having any kids, and I was still able to at the time. No kids for me. And I, you know, it's when you think about dating in your early 40s, a lot of men want another family or a family. And so I had to really get clear that, I don't want that, and I don't care who it is. I'm not doing that. And because I would go along with whatever, if I wanted to be with you, I'd go along with whatever you wanted to do. If you wanted to have a baby, I'm having a baby, you know. And so it was, you know, I knew I had to sort of stick with what I thought was best for me. And that's hard because I've been compromising my whole life. And so that's why, it took me 3 years to sort of sort through all that crap and really get to where I felt comfortable with who I was becoming and what I wanted to be. And, you know, at the time, this started when I was 17 years sober. So, you know, if you think you've arrived, I wouldn't sort of count on it. So I spent a lot of time thinking about that, and then I did meet someone, and you know, after 2 weeks, he's sitting in the back of the room, and I decided I really liked him. The first thing I said is, I'm not having any babies. So we're dating, you know, and 2 weeks in, and I just make this statement because I didn't want to, like, fall in love and find out he wants to have a baby, and then I got to leave. He actually took some time and thought about it, which scared the hell out of me. He took some time. He talked to his friends that have kids. He talked to his sponsor and his mother and, you know, everybody, and came back and said, you know, I never wanted children, but when you put it that way, I thought, I guess I better be sure. And he was sure, I guess. And so we ended up getting married. But, you know, I'm really grateful because that was like new behavior for me to be able to say, this is what I want for myself, and I'm not going to compromise that. And you're either in or it was really nice to know you. I thought that was, for me, that was a huge growing point in my sobriety. And we have a really good relationship, and he likes to say, he usually says this, I don't, a husband, a father, and a grandfather all in the same day when we got married. And and we've been learning how to live in this blended family of ours. And it's been sometimes really great, and we just came off of a really great vacation with all of our family. And then sometimes it's kind of stressful, but we work through it because we talk to each other and we communicate. And, you know, he's actually better at that than I am, but we do. I eventually get there. And we have a really great relationship. The other thing I want to mention is that son of mine who was really the recipient of much of my drinking behavior is now happily married. He and his wife have 7 children, and I know. And they're all theirs, and they're all single births. And, you know, we're very proud of them. He's a good father. He's a really good father. And his father actually has passed away several years ago, but he probably was one of us and never got help. And so because of that, he really wasn't a good father. He loved his son a lot, but he just never could be there for him. And so he really grew up without a real father. And he said to me when his girlfriend at the time got pregnant, she was his girlfriend until number 3, by the way. I guess I wanted to be sure. He told me at the time, he said, I'm not going to be like my father was. And he has not for a minute. And I'm just really proud of him. And, you know, I really believe why he is where he is because he has found a relationship with a higher power that he calls God. And he's done that all on his own, and he's just a normal guy. And, you know, he drinks now and then, and his wife made him finally give up pot. He is responsible, and he goes to church every Sunday, and he has 7 wonderful children. And he and his wife are really good partners in taking care of those children. And, you know, rarely do I see them fighting over that, which, You know, if you're a parent, you know what that means. You start keeping score about who's done what. And I just never see them doing that, and it amazes me that they just take such good care of their kids. I didn't teach him that. Her background's a little sketchy, too. I'm not sure she learned that. So they've just learned how to do that together, which I think is really a gift from God. And then my daughter, who it was born with my first marriage, she is now 21 and a college student, and is wonderful too. She's I'm very proud of both of them, and they life has not been easy for them because they have a mother who has a career and who does a lot of AA service work and thinks that AA meetings are really important, and so they've had to sort of be a part of that, and they've been. Everybody's turned out well, and I've learned how to be responsible, and so I do the right things with them, or at least I try, and I'm very, very fortunate to have them both in my life, and my daughter-in-law, who allows me all the time I want with any of those 7 children. Can you imagine? two of them are at my house right now. we brought 2 back. It's really, my life is really good. And, I would like to talk just a minute about AA service work. In the process of working the steps, I learned a lot of things. But one of the things that I gained from that is a relationship with a higher power. And I learned how to pray, and I learned how to, if not meditate well, I at least can listen. And and some weeks I'm really good at doing that, and other weeks I'm not so good. But overall, I'm pretty consistent. And so what has really come from that is a lot of gratitude and the realization that I wouldn't be standing in front of you today. I might not even be alive today if I wasn't sober. And I really think that AA has everything to do with that, because it brought me to the higher power that I know today. It brought me to a set of principles that I can now live by that I didn't have before I got here. They were certainly words I was familiar with, but I didn't know how to incorporate them in my life. And and I was always taught when I got sober that gratitude is an action word, and that if you're grateful, you need to show it by giving back. And if I didn't give back, I couldn't keep what I received here. And so I learned very on that AA service work was very important to my sobriety. And I've always been involved. I can tell you that there's probably only 1 or 2 periods of my sobriety that I did not have an AA service job. And one time I know is because I was just finishing up my undergraduate degree and I was doubling up, and I knew that I couldn't serve AA well or anybody else well if I made commitments outside of school work. And so I did not have a job for that year when I was trying to finish up. And then, and I don't know what the other time was. I don't know why I did, but it has just been very important to me. And, so I'm doing it because I want to stay sober. Right? And that's what I was taught to do. And it's a sacrifice of time. And it takes away from some family events and other things. But I feel like my sobriety is the most important thing in my life. If I don't have that, I don't have the family or anything else. And so I do it. Well, what I didn't realize was going to come out of it is all the relationships that I have gained and the fullness and richness of my life that has happened as a result of that. I mean, I just had no idea. They didn't tell me that. They just said, clean the ashtrays if you want to stay sober. And so my only expectation was staying sober, and it's been so much more than that. And, I got to be a part of the International Convention, and wow, what an event that was. And I see some green shirts around here. You can stop wearing the green shirts now. I know we wore them for a long time, but it's okay to stop now. No, thank you for reminding me, actually. I put one on my granddaughter this afternoon when she got out of the shower. I'm very grateful because just that was the most recent. And I can't tell you how many new friends I have. I mean real friends, not people I met from other countries in the hallway, but people that I go to meetings with, and they're here in Metro Atlanta that I now have stronger relationships with. I know them better. We've connected, and I now have more friends as a result of that. And, I'm very, very grateful. And to be able to be a part of that and just to see our fellowship in action. And, you know, there one guy I was on MARTA coming home from the Tuesday night registration, and there was a guy on MARTA that had a badge on, and so we started talking to him. Turns out he was in a hotel a mile from the MARTA station. I said, oh, we'll drive you to your hotel. And so we took him to his hotel, and the next thing you know, he spent the whole weekend in volunteer headquarters, and we all got to know him real well. Now we're Facebook friends, too. And, he's just now a part of my little circle of friends because I gave him a ride home from the MARTA station. And it really was nothing other than a nice gesture. And so, that's really neat. And he actually is going through a divorce, which I have experience with, and I was able to share my experience with him about that. And, this is how this works. And so, I can't emphasize enough, if you're new, how, it's nice to get the good job, and it's nice to, maybe buy a house because you're now financially responsible, whatever, but that's nothing compared to what comes from the relationships with the people that we have. These are people that would do anything for me, and I know that, and I would do anything for them, and they know that about me, and what a great way to live, to be surrounded by people like that. And so I keep doing AA service work because that's what I get. And I'm sober too. and so, I mean, it's like it's so much now a part of what I do. I don't feel like I do it anymore to stay sober. I do it because it keeps me connected to you. And I'm really, really grateful for that. And that is all that I have to share. Thank you very much.